You're listening to The Point. We're talking with psychologist Michael Abbruzzese. His book is 10 Lessons in Power Psychology. Our toll-free number, if you'd like to join the conversation, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. And then hit the number 5. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Now, lots of people make the New Year's resolution to lose weight. And a couple of things you suggest, you have a chapter in here about losing weight. You suggest before you get started, A, you talk to your doctor, and then you write down what you're eating now. So before you even change your eating habits, you write that down, gives you a baseline. Mm-hmm. You might be surprised what you're actually eating.
Right, yeah. Right. That's a very important thing to do. Most people don't realize it. Most people, whenever you say, oh, you know, you should really write something down, you should keep a journal, you should keep a diary. Most people roll their eyes and say, you know, I'm not doing that. And in fact, it is quite true that most people believe they have no time. I don't have time to keep. Are you crazy? Maybe I can jot something down on my day planner. But it takes a long time to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Memo to people. That is the point. If it takes you a long time to write down what you're doing, I'm giving you a replacement behavior other than eating, and I'm also making a suggestion as to what you could do that would delay your eating. And to some point, you may say, you know, this is just not worth it. I'm going to skip this and wait for lunch. And you may think, oh, that's ridiculous. No, that research really indicates that's true, which is why the first thing that any person who helps people do medical weight loss is they tell them to keep a journal of what they're eating, because we know that delaying the urge to eat something is really a method of impulse control. The urge to take any drugs, the urge to smoke a cigarette, the urge to grab a Twinkie, all those things could be considered in the classification of addictive-ish kind of behaviors. And we know that those impulse, those thoughts in our head, they last for just fractions of seconds. They're very powerful. But if we can just hold off on that impulse to do whatever, then we are further ahead on being able to accomplish our goal of not doing that behavior. So it's really important to keep a journal. I do have some pages in the book, and you can photocopy them. You can find them other places, online or maybe from your physician. But you want to keep a record of what you're having. You may be surprised at what you're having. And another benefit is that you may see grouping of behaviors at certain times of the day. A lot of people eat after 8 o'clock at night. Some people eat after 10 o'clock at night or up until 2 o'clock in the morning. That tends to put a lot of weight on our bodies. And the general guideline is don't eat after 6 o'clock at night. Now, I know you're saying, what? I don't get home until 6 o'clock at night. Well, the idea is eat as little as possible. Try to eat during the day. It's better to have meals every 2.5 or 3 hours, small meals, than one killer meal at 6:30 or 7. That's not going to help your metabolism, having one killer meal. Stretch it out during the day and try hard not to have very much after 6.
All right, let's just talk about the word diet for a second here, because you know, people are like, well, I want to try this diet. There's a million different diets out there to lose that weight. But really, when you're looking long term, you want to look at what your diet is, not this I'm changing what I'm eating just to lose weight. You do want to, but you want to embrace something that's going to be long term. That's you're going to be able to. I think you once said to me, you could lose weight on the jelly donut diet.
Absolutely.
You know, you're eating jelly. But really, you want, and you mentioned two in here, the Mediterranean diet and the DASH diet.
Right. I think about the websites linked in there. The Mediterranean diet and the DASH diet are two diets that have been pretty well researched. And broadly defined, the Mediterranean diet is pretty much what folks in the Mediterranean would eat, you know, but this is what they would eat back in the old days. You know, when they didn't have a lot of cars, when they didn't have a lot of supermarkets, you pretty much go and get what you can that's grown locally. You don't have a whole lot of meat. You have some fish. You have a lot of vegetables. You have some grains. And you have different proportions. And there's a lot of research to support the Mediterranean diet being very good for a long-term lifestyle kind of diet. And as you said, Mindy, we all have a diet. What we're eating today is our diet. You know, people think a diet is weight loss. No, that would be a, quote, weight loss, unquote, diet.
Mm-hmm.
Then they transition to a, quote, maintenance, quote, diet. But basic diet just means whatever we're eating. If you're eating a bunch of junk, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out, cut back on the junk.
Right.
And the biggest thing you do is start walking. Also, the DASH diet. The DASH diet originally started out to help people control their sodium intake for cardiovascular. But it's been found to have very good results similar to the Mediterranean diet in controlling a whole bunch of cardiovascular issues, and so does the Mediterranean diet. And I will say this, if you go out to get prepared food at some of the supermarkets, and they now do a great job of giving all sorts of, you know, food you can bring at home and feed your family with prepared food, take a look at the sodium content.
Mm-hmm.
I once looked at the sodium content in a sub sandwich at a local supermarket had 1,047%.
Wow, I know.
And exactly why was this? I've been reading labels for a long time. You know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, there was never this much salt in kind of things. Why is there so much salt now? Even the American Heart Association has got on board. They're certifying heart-friendly sodium at up to 14 and 16%.
Yeah.
That's absurd.
Well, it's interesting, too. About a year or so ago, we did this sort of cleansing thing, and it was like hardly any sodium. It was none. And it was amazing because, you know, those little fish crackers like the Pepperidge Farm makes. I love those things. But I didn't eat those for a week. I didn't have any, and when I ate them, it was like putting pure salt into my mouth.
Salty,
it is amazing
right.
how much salt is in things.
Right. And it's my experience from the people I've worked with over these decades that about 3.5-4 days of modifying your diet is enough to start your body to change so you actually will taste things.
Yeah.
So you
it's amazing.
Right. Yeah. You don't need 2.5 weeks to see results. You're going to sense results in as little as 3 or 4 days for most people.
Right. All right. There's a listener who wants you to spell your last name.
Oh, it's ABRUZZESE. The website is draplus.com.
Yeah, and we're going to put a link on our website to yours, draplus.com. That's easier to remember than
Upper Zazie. Right. Yeah.
All right, you also have a chapter on how power psychology can help you have more joy. And I think a lot of people would be interested. And we should say, all of these chapters, these 10 lessons that you use, each one starts with the same thing as what is power psychology.
Right.
So you
can
skip around the book. You don't have to read it.
You can skip around. The chapters are very short. A lot of pages, as I say in the book, a lot of pages are repetitive. And the reason they're repetitive is that I want to change your behavior. So I'm giving you the opportunity to keep on reading the same thing over and over again.
That's important.
That's right. That's how you adopt new behaviors. So I want to differentiate joy from happiness. And I think it was Abraham Lincoln who was once quoted as saying, people are about as happy as they made up their mind to be. And this is from a guy who reportedly had a very turbulent life and suffered bouts of depression. So we have to understand that, again, we're not talking about being flawless here. We're not talking about being flawless. Nobody bats 1,000. No one gets everything right every single time. No one always says the same thing. If we all were movie stars making a movie, then every time we made a mistake, the director would say, cut, take this over again, get new makeup on, change the camera angle. Okay, now say that line again. That only lives in the movies. It doesn't live in our real life. So no one is flawless. No one is flawless. And having joy is really a matter of deciding to have joy. And joy does not mean happiness. You can be in miserable surroundings and you can still have joy in your life. And with the recent passing of Nelson Mandela, I think I can probably use him as an example. He was in jail for, 27 years? You know, or at least a couple of decades. Mm-hmm. And then he came out and he was smiling. And did anyone ever see a picture of him not smiling? Mm-hmm. And when he came out, didn't he have some difficulty with his wife was involved with embezzlement? I don't remember the story, but I guess had to get a divorce. So he was able to smile through all of that. And we know from our studies of people who came out of the Holocaust, how did they manage to survive? Well, they didn't manage to survive by thinking how what a horrible kind of existence it is. They tried to find a way to adapt. And we know from our studies of developmental psychology in kids, human beings will habituate to anything. I mean, we'll get used to anything. That doesn't mean it's good for us. Mm-hmm. We'll just get used to it. You have the jelly donut diet, you'll get used to it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean it's good for you. You get used to it. Are you in an abusive situation? You'll get used to it. That doesn't mean it's good for you. It just means you get used to it. And you want to have some joy in your life because the more you can make up your mind to have joy, which is different from happiness, you'll be able to have a perspective of what is possible. Do you choose to continue to be in the kind of relationship you're in? That's your choice. But you can have joy with it. Are you in a loveless relationship? Some people may recommend get out of it. Get out of it. Other people would recommend, no, find a way to have some joy in your life. And once you have joy in your life, then you'll be able to continue having that loveless relationship because maybe there's a greater good. So the chapter talks about the techniques that you can actually put into practice to have some joy. And understand, joy doesn't mean you're happy about stuff. Doesn't mean you're happy with what's going on in your life. It just means that you're not going to let it get you down and get you depressed.
Right. Well, so what you're talking here is problems are going to happen. We're always going to have things that will happen. But you say it's how we react to the problems that's important. And yeah, I think you gave an example here. It's like somebody has a flooded basement. Well, nobody wants a flooded basement. But and when you think about it, I mean, don't you love to be around those people when something bad happens and they you know, they're able to, as you say, to right. find that something amusing in it. And it just cuts the tension. Yeah, you clean it up, you move on, rather than dwelling in how horrible this is.
And we know who those people are because they stand out in our mind.
Absolutely.
When somebody walks in, we know if that person is going to bring us down or if they're going to bring us up. Someone has a big smile on their face. We know, that's Joey. He's always smiling. That's Sally. She's always happy. We want to hang around those people.
Absolutely.
I remember once years ago, I was working when I was very young, working in a store. And there was always a girl in the store who was always happy. She was bubbly. She was cheery. Everyone wanted to work with her. Well, we had a new manager came in the store. The store is no longer in business. It was a chain that went out of business a long time ago, who everyone dreaded working with. He was such a dreadful person to work with. And one day it was just decided that she would be working and helping this guy. And I passed by her one day, and she looked the gloomiest I've ever seen her in my life. I'm going someplace with this. Bear with me. And I said to her, so how you doing with so-and-so? And she said, how do you think I'm doing with him? He really brought her down.
Yeah.
So I want to say this. It's really important. It is easier for someone to bring you down than for you to bring somebody up. And that's really important. So when you think, I'm going to help someone, I am going to make this person better, I'm going to take care of them, think long and hard about doing that without any kind of support. You need to have a lot of support if you're going to do that, because it's always easier for the naysayers and the negative people to bring you down than for you to bring them up. So if you're on a ladder and you want to give someone a hand up, believe me, it's a lot easier for them to pull you down off that ladder. Okay, so keep that in mind. And if you're going to do that, and most people, I wrote this book because most people who could benefit from this, they're never going to set foot in a psychologist's office. Then they wouldn't be caught dead in the office, or they don't have the money to do it, they haven't got the right insurance, or there aren't enough people in the area, or the people in there are badly trained, or they're in a rural area, they don't have any behavioral health. Understand that you may not have access to coaches who could help you do these things. So if you really want to be around people who are naysayers and you want to be able to take care of yourself, you have got to learn some techniques. And at some point, you're going to need some coaching. Because you may have to just say to yourself, I just can't help this person. I just can't hang out in this group anymore. I'm not the same person that I used to be when I hung out with them, and I've got to move on. Mm-hmm. So bear in mind, it's always easier for someone to drag you down than for you to pull someone up. It is always our goal to try and help people up and try and help people find their own reward and find their own dreams and help them out. It's always our goal to do that. But sometimes the situation is just beyond our ability to do that.
All right. So it's the holidays. As we talked a little bit about this last month, expectations around the holidays can be a little bit unrealistic. How do we manage that, and how do we manage the disappointments?
Well, I think it's important to understand awareness. We talked about this before. Mm-hmm. If you did not know, if you're hanging out with a group, say your family, who visits, if you didn't know who your uncle is, you know, if you didn't have that history with him or your aunt or your mom or your dad, what would you think of them? If you took a clear perspective, trying to stay in the moment and be aware of what their behavior is like, how would you treat them? I have people I've worked with, and they say, oh, you know, my mother's coming. She was just the worst mother ever. The way she was just dreadful to me and my father. And, you know, I see her like twice a year. I dread every second. And every time they tell me what the mother has done, I always think, you know, that doesn't really sound all that bad. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not doubting they had difficulty before. But the present behavior doesn't sound like the same woman they're describing. So I understand they have a history, but if you didn't react to your own behavioral history, if you weren't triggered by the same things that triggered you earlier, how might you behave? So that's a technique for trying to be in the moment and be aware of what's going on. So that's what I say in terms of expectations. Don't have a whole lot of expectation other than I'm going to go there and I'm going to see what's happening, mm-hmm. and I'm going to try and be the best that I can. And I'm going to be triggered by Uncle Joey all the time. Okay, then I guess I'm going to try not to be triggered by Uncle Joey, or they don't control their little kids. The kids always make a big mess when they come into my house. Okay, I don't think I want that anymore, so I think I'm going to have some rules in effect, and I'm going to see how they work. So again, try and solve the problem. Don't be anxious about mm-hmm. what's coming up. Try and stay in the moment and be proactive. Have some fun at this. Talk about having some joy. You can always have the expectation of joyfulness at any season. This is a lousy day outside. It's very cold. It's freezing. I see a lot of people walking the beach. They seem to love it. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess it's not a lousy day. I guess it's not freezing for them.
They might find something on the beach because other people aren't there picking it up. See?
That's a good point. That is really a good point. So expectations really are part of our mindset. Have the kind of mindset you want. If you want to have a happier day today, then have a happier day.
Mm-hmm. All right. So New Year's resolutions. What do you think about them?
I think New Year's resolutions are good for a couple of reasons, because there's something about the beginning of a year. You know, some people have their year begins on the academic year. We have fiscal years that end maybe in June or July. Mm-hmm. Everyone has the certain psychological start date in their mind. So this is the end of the year. Well, it's not the end of the year. I mean, just one day is after another. There's no such thing as a year. We've created this calendar. You know, back, 500 years ago, we had a different calendar. So it's always good because it's a psychological start date. We like to have new beginnings. We like to have closure. Okay, that's in our own head. Fine. At the end of the month, see how you're doing on any kind of your New Year's resolutions. Don't wait until the end of the year. Don't wait until 6 months. Have feedback every week. Reward yourself every little day. You know, if you want to have a reward program for a child to get grades, you don't wait until the report card comes out. Reward them for doing their homework every day or at the end of the week. Little bite-sized chunks are the best thing for us to do. So if you have a psychological start date as of January 1st, I think that's great. Pick any start date you want, and if it helps you to start sooner, start sooner.
All right, thoughts for keeping on track with your resolutions?
Well, again, I think you should keep a journal, make a list, and make your goals. You should have two lists. You should have a long-term list, and you can define long-term however you want. 3 years, 100 years, I don't care. Then you should have a short-term list. You should have like 5 or 6 things on each list, and then break those down into subcategories. And the subcategories should be broken down per week. And every day, authorities differ on this. Some people say 3 things a day, some people say 5 things a day, but clearly the more things a day that you do are better. Every day you should do at least one thing that brings you closer to whatever goal you have on your list. So I want to learn how to speed read. I want to lose 10 pounds. Well, you're not going to lose 10 pounds on that day, so you better have a subcategory.
It's going to be realistic, yeah.
Right. So I am now going to cut back on eating jelly donuts today. Well, you can do that. Mm-hmm. It's going to help you lose 10 pounds at the end of the month, but it's not going to help you lose 10 pounds that day. So you want to break things down into sub-goals that are manageable and are reasonable and that you can track. Write your goals down, monitor them, be aware how you're doing, and track them. Track anything. You have an advertising campaign? Track your advertising campaign. You have a campaign to have a better personality, meet more friends, have a different job. Track how that campaign is going. Mm-hmm. Make a list and track the progress and try and do one thing a day.
And then real quickly, if you fall off, you don't just get right back on.
Start again.
So, no, yeah.
It's not a matter. You can't be flawless in your life. Start over again. Don't recriminate. Just start over.
All right. Dr. Michael Abbruzzese, his book is 10 Lessons, How to Improve Your Life Using Power Psychology Techniques. It comes out in a couple of weeks, but there's more on his website, which we'll link on ours, capeandislands.org. Thanks for being here. Happy holidays. I'm Indy Todd. Thanks for listening.
Amy Vince produces The Point with assistance from Jenny Junker. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH.